You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Well, hello there. Welcome to GameScoop Presents Back in the Day, IGN's new retro gaming podcast. I am Damon Hatfield, host of GameScoop, and I like to think retro gaming aficionado. I'm joined by Jack DeVries.
I'm young, so it's true. I don't know why I'm here.
Well, you've been playing games since you were a little pup.
Yeah, yes.
And you were a little pup in the 90s, so that kind of qualifies
you. Which is now old. That's retro now.
Games, 90s games are retro.
In video game years, I'm ancient.
It's true. And Colin Moriarty.
Yes,
he's
hello.
Also here. Maybe let's start out by just discussing a little bit of our retro gaming roots.
Okay.
So my first gaming console I ever had was an Atari 2600, and I think the first game I remember playing is Defender on that. How about you guys? First console, first game you remember playing?
First console I actually owned was a Sega Genesis, because my parents hated gaming, but the first games I would play religiously was Super Mario Brothers on the NES.
You had the Genesis first?
I would go over to my friend's house and play Mario and would sneak up to his room, and sometimes would sneak in when he was gone. I don't know how I got away with that. Weird, when I was like four, and would play it. But Genesis and Sonic the Hedgehog 1 mm-hmm. were my first games that I personally owned.
Mm-hmm. For me, the first console I owned was an NES. So the earliest game I remember playing is Kid Icarus. I was born in 1984, so really I was blessed with having a brother that's 11 years older than me. And since I was very young, I just wrote about it actually in the Final Fantasy IV PSP review about how my brother would, when I was like 6 or 7, he would be playing Final Fantasy II when it just came out. And when everyone went to bed, he'd come into my room and come into my room and watch me play it late at night or whatever. And then I'd sit there. So it was really due to him that I had exposure to things like Atari and early NES games and stuff like that, which is good. So,
cool.
Yeah.
You have a retro gaming system of choice? Like, what's been your favorite console ever? For me, it has to be the NES.
Oh, yeah.
It probably is for most people.
Yeah. Anyone who actually got to play an NES while it was out will probably say that.
Yeah, I agree. NES has first of all, NES's library is huge, and it has really something for everyone, and really many things for everyone. So that's really the best part about it is you point to something like even like a contemporary like Master System, you're like, all right, it has like Alex Kidd and like Phantasy Star. But like with this, it's like, you know, NES has like a slew of RPGs and a slew of action games and some great, you know, puzzle games and some great, you know, even adventure games, like point and click like adventure games and stuff.
Yeah, so that's where I was, you know, got started playing point and click games like Shadowgate, Uninvited, Deja Vu, and even there was King's Quest V.
Nice.
That's where I played King's Quest V, was on the NES.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I'm sure some people think that that's an impure port the game.
It probably is, but that's how I experienced it.
Yeah, and that was my earliest experience with adventure games and point-and-click games, too, because it's like, I didn't really play the earliest PC game I remember playing was like Chip's Challenge. So that's like well after. That's around maybe the mid 90s, but that was about when I started getting into that stuff. So
I know you're a big Castlevania fan.
Yes.
Colin. And you wrote a piece this week on Castlevania.
I did. Yeah, it just felt like a few weeks ago I wrote a piece about Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3, which were really popular NES games, and I wanted to kind of spin that off into writing about some other another series I really loved, which definitely is Castlevania, and the trio of NES Castlevania games I think are really great. I think they're all really epic games. And I wanted to write about how, even though I think many people accept, and I know you do, I don't know how Jack feels about it, but I know that many people accept that Symphony of the Night is the on PlayStation and Saturn is the best Castlevania game, but I wanted to kind of reignite passion for the original Castlevania games on NES and how we first appreciated the horror genre and how we first appreciated the sights and sounds of the day and how they really did scare the shit out of us, at least me.
See, I didn't have that experience.
So tell me about
it. It didn't scare the shit out of me. Really? I liked the game a lot, really? But I was never scared by it.
Oh, I definitely was. And like I talked about the Nintendo Power cover for Simon's Quest, which is the second Castlevania game, and how it's a picture of a real person holding like Dracula's head, like Simon Belmont holding Dracula's head, and how that was like really scared people back in the day. That's like an infamous cover of Nintendo Power.
Cool cover.
Do you remember what issue that is?
No, it's like 1980.
Early.
Yeah, it's 1988, I think. So it would have to be like in the first 20 issues.
Yeah. But I thought that's when it started.
Mario. Oh, yeah, I guess so. Mario 2 was the first cover. So, yeah, it'd have to be maybe only a year or so after that at the most. But, yeah, I don't know the exact date.
How old were you when you first played Castlevania then? Or, like, what grade were you in? Like,
I was probably like 4 or 5 when I first started playing Castlevania. So, I don't know what
you're probably. You're like in kindergarten playing this game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I was probably in 4th or 5th grade.
Okay.
Several years older when I played it, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, and I was scared by many things as a kid, so it wasn't that surprising that those things would scare me. But that definitely invokes when you play horror games now and stuff like that. I definitely think about the music and the MIDI sounds and stuff like that. Really,
the music is really really good. Yeah. In Castlevania.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, I said my piece about the NES Castlevania games. And
you just
how
feel
passionate
like the trio of NES games are overlooked.
Oh, I think easily and rightfully so in a way, because I mean, Castlevania since Symphony of the Night has gone in such a specific Metroidvania RPG direction, for the most part, with the exception of some of the PS2 games and then Lords of Shadow, which just came out.
Yeah, totally different from
NES. Yeah. And I like those games too, and I even like Castlevania 64, but I think that, you know, the way they moved in the RPG direction with the huge sprawling maps, and I think that people have forgotten the proud roots of the series, and I just wanted people that maybe forgot about them or never played them to begin with to really go back and say, like, turn on your Wii and just spend $15 and download the 3 Castlevania games and just see where they came from. And see, obviously the controls are pretty stiff, and it doesn't. We have rose-tinted glasses in a sense when we think about those games because we loved them as a kid, but they're still really good, and I just wanted people to go back and experience them again if they could.
So here's how I thought about the NES trio.
Okay.
I really liked the first one because I was into like horror stuff. I was really into horror movies when I was a kid, so I found, there's this cool horror game, you know, where you're going through this haunted castle and whipping Medusa heads and looking for Dracula. I thought that was great. But then the second one blew my mind because it was such a deeper game.
Right.
Like it was more of an adventure. Like I've always liked games that let me explore, you know, like Zelda and stuff like that, where I actually could like take my time exploring new environments. Whereas the original Castlevania was an action game, you know, it's like much more faster paced, and you're not exploring. You don't get to decide where you go.
And,
you're moving in a very linear straight line.
Yeah.
So I loved the second game, but then when the third one came out, it was. Back to much closer to what the first game was.
Right.
So I was disappointed with that. I was like, well, I want to play that. I like that action RPG style of Castlevania 2.
Yeah, I dig it too. And I think that's what I kind of called out in the piece was that for the Castlevania games we got in America, and obviously there were like MSX games and PC Engine games that we didn't get and stuff like that, and we got these games much later. But when you really look at what Symphony of the Night did, obviously it took a major cue from Super Metroid, but it also really kind of continued, I think, a tradition that they kind of tried to do with Simon's Quest. And it's kind of funny when you think about NES games, 3 series come to mind that, you know, that I think about, like, where the first game did something and the second game did something really different. People actually enjoyed it. Super Mario 2, obviously, is not a real Super Mario game, but that's totally different, really,
still
than the first one.
Awesome game.
Yeah, it's awesome. And obviously, Zelda 2 is totally different than the original Zelda.
Totally.
And so Castlevania 2 kind of did the same kind of thing. And I agree. I think Simon's Quest is the best Castlevania game with the exception of Symphony of the Night. But I also know it's like
I think that's a controversial statement, Jack.
I don't know. I think I might agree with that. Actually, I'm trying to think of a way I wouldn't agree with it. But no, I'm gonna give him to that.
I mean, what? So, Jack, what Castlevania games did you really enjoy?
I mean, Castlevania 2 is definitely right there for me, because that was actually the first one I played. I missed one because I was a baby. Mm-hmm. And then 3, I couldn't really get into it because 2 was my first one, and I was like, oh, this one's different. I don't like it as much and stuff. I really liked the exploring thing, and I think that's later what got me into the Metroid series, actually, was that I really liked getting to run around and, like, go back and search and find things and find new things. And so that was kind of how I got into that. So, like, that's how Castlevania always kind of has that soft spot for me.
It's interesting that you say that, because now Castlevania now is a blend of Metroid and Castlevania, the original Castlevania, right?
Yeah,
they call
it
Metroidvania.
Right.
That's what we think of as modern Castlevania games.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's totally fine. Like, when I think about, like, when I think about in 2001 going the day that Game Boy Advance came out and picking up Circle of the Moon, like, that was really exciting because Symphony of the Night happened in 97 and we had to wait really 4 years to get another one of those games. And that was, even though it was, like, really dark and you had to play it under a lamp and stuff, like, that was the interesting thing with that game. It was, like, it was still really fun. And now we really come to expect those games, and they're coming out almost like Madden games. Not quite as often, but, like, you have a lot of them on GBA and DS. And I think that's totally fine, but, like, I just wanted people to, I love old games, and I think that they're really, as we get further, like, a lot of solid games are being ignored, and because there's only so many hours in the day, and I understand that. And some of us were lucky enough to be able to play them when they came out. And so I just wanted to kind of spread that love with people that may have missed them or just forgot about them. I know that reading the comments in the story, a lot of people looked at the Nintendo Power cover and were like, man, I remember that cover. Like, that's what retro gaming is all about. So I just want, you know, the remembrance and, like, understanding where, you know, I really believe that understanding where games are now, you really have to understand where games were. And so that's kind of what I was trying to.
Yeah. Something I've been realizing recently is that there's a lot of people that played the NES and have the same memories that we do. And that number isn't getting smaller, obviously. Those people are always going to be there. But the amount of gamers who never played an NES game is getting bigger and bigger. Because,
right?
I mean, it just makes sense if you may not think of it.
But. Right.
So, yeah, there's so many, like, IGN readers who, like, we sit around and talk about NES games all the time. But, like, so many of our readers did not have that experience and or haven't played an NES game yet.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, I understand. I mean, you can't help that. You know, yeah, it's only, like, what you were exposed to. I mean, like I said, like, I was born in 84, so if I was the oldest Moriarty kid, for instance, instead of being the youngest, then I wouldn't have had, like, sisters and a brother that were, like, really playing this stuff and, you know, really showing it to me at an early age and really bringing me up as a gamer from a very, very early age. And sometimes I'd even think about these games I was playing when I was really young, and, like, I go back and play them now, like Kid Icarus or whatever. I was like, I'm pretty sure I was, like, 5 and 6, like, totally killing this game, and now I'm like, I can barely play it anymore. And so it's just kind of funny. I understand people don't have the same experiences, but I think retro gaming is, like, super important. I like knowing, you know, as being a lover of history, I like knowing where things have been. And I think you can really make, like, a genetic trail from games back in the day to where they've been now. And I really like that kind of stuff. So that was what I was kind of trying to talk about in my piece.
What was the response to it?
I think it was mostly positive. Some people were disappointed that I didn't bring up Super Castlevania, which is a Super Nintendo game, Castlevania 4, and, you know, Rondo of Blood and Bloodlines and stuff like that.
But these came later. These are the 16-bit era of Castlevania.
And I know people are really fond of, for instance, like Rondo of Blood. I know people really love that game. And I know people really love, you know, Super Castlevania.
Yeah.
I'm not as into those games as I am into the NES games. And really what I was trying, I really wanted to focus on the NES games, the trilogy on NES. And that's even what the strap line of the article said. So people were quick to point that out. But at the same time, like, there's enough room for appreciation of those games. But I wanted to go way back to the roots of Castlevania, at least in America. And see where those games were and just kind of show how, like, kind of string a thread between those games to the games of today.
Did you get into Harmony of Despair?
No, I didn't. So that's the downloadable game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so someone had said in the comments that there's a map in that game that is the entire original castle from Castlevania.
I think so.
That's,
I mean,
pretty cool.
The game is all assets from previous Castlevania games.
That's all. I didn't know that. I'm waiting. I play mostly at home on PlayStation, so that game's only on XBLA. And I've been waiting, and I was kind of certain that it would eventually come, but it seems like, well, if it follows the normal trait, we got Castle Crashers like 2.5 years later, so maybe we'll get it sometime in 2013.
Mortal Kombat came out this week.
Indeed.
I don't know if you guys heard about that.
What is this game?
New Mortal Kombat. Reboot of the Mortal Kombat franchise. And actually, I think the game, it turned out really well. It's actually really
best
cool.
Mortal Kombat in over a decade?
Yeah, easily. You know, you were saying you weren't really into it, Colin, but I think that it's a really entertaining game to watch. So the fatalities are so awesome. They make me so happy to watch the fatalities and the babalities. It's just like, Is that so much creativity went into those, and it's like I like the it's kind of an old school gaming thing where there's secrets that you have to find, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Just neat. Yeah, I mean, I totally am digging this game. Ryan Scott and I were playing it and trying to figure out whether it was the best Mortal Kombat since 3 or if it was the best Mortal Kombat ever, which is people are saying both of these things.
Could be possible because I mean the original Mortal Kombat like
It's not that great of a game.
Yeah, it's just
it's not deep. It's
it
not,
was always all about the fatalities. Like
right,
if you if you took the fatalities out of Mortal Kombat, what would it be? It'd be Pit Fighter on a 2D plane.
Like. Yeah, exactly. But like it feels so much like the old 16-bit kind of era Mortal Kombat games. I mean, it's finally back in 2D. It's got this like a lot of the moves just feel like they used to, and they're using a lot of the same like kind of classic moves. Like they've went away from that. So while like Scorpion and Sub-Zero still did their like spear and freezing things, like you didn't have that like cheesy katana fan thing anymore. But that's back. So like as you play it, you start to like get back into that mode and figure it out. And it's kind of refreshing to like have Mortal Kombat back.
Yeah,
yeah.
Colin, I think you said Mortal Kombat is the last game you would want to play. Like,
yeah, I mean,
ever, right?
Yeah, I mean, so like my memory. You know, I haven't played the new Mortal Kombat. I'm not going to judge the game as it is now. I will say that I'm completely disinterested in playing it because of my experience with Mortal Kombat when we were younger.
So what was that experience?
So, I mean, I very clearly remember getting Mortal Kombat on SNES because that's what I had for my birthday. My mom, like, picked me up at school when she had the box. And obviously this was the version of the game that didn't have blood in it and stuff like that. So
no spine rip?
Yeah, none of that stuff. And that's fine. I didn't really care. I wanted, like, a fighting game. I was really into Street Fighter and... And again, because my brother was we were really into it on SNES, Street Fighter 2 and 2 Turbo and stuff. And what I really think about the game is like, yeah, it was gimmicky. You know, it's like, it's often a conversation I get on Podcast Beyond when we talk about Sonic, because I hate Sonic. And,
I've never been a Sonic fan either.
And what I always say is like, you know, all right, so Sonic, you know, Sonic 1 and Super Mario World are like contemporaries, right? And 1 is like a really...
to me, there's like, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
Like, Super Mario World is such a vastly superior game.
Exactly.
Like,
that's kind of the way I see it.
That's like, crazy to me.
It's like one game is really still a 10. Super Mario World is like an amazing game.
Yes.
It still feels great. It looks great. One game has gimmicks. It's like a fast character and like all this crap, but the game is stiff and it doesn't feel good at all. Like, I played it. It came out on PSN recently, and I was like, this game sucks. Like, and that's kind of the way I feel about Mortal Kombat. It's like you have a really solid fighter with Street Fighter 2, a really good game, a game people still play. And then you have Mortal Kombat, which people played because of the violence in the game. Mm-hmm. And that was especially timely with everything that was going on with ESRB at the time and the government really getting involved in video games. And so that's what people remember. But when you play the game mechanically, that game isn't good. And that's what I think about. You know, I always just went back to Street Fighter 2 Turbo. I'm like, this game's better, you know? And so that's what I think about. So with Mortal Kombat, like whenever I hear Mortal Kombat, it's like when 2 and 3 came out, yeah, you played in the arcade and it was fun. But you're like, man, like this series is kind of stupid. Like, there's a better fighting series, and there's only so many hours in the day, like we said before. So I'm going to focus in on what's good and what's great. And same thing with Super Mario World. Mm. And now that Mortal Kombat's back, it's like those are my memories. Like, it really burned into my brain. It's like Mortal Kombat's just a stiff fighter. It's got the violence gimmick. So did Thrill Kill and all those other games. You know, it's like Thrill Kill never came out, I guess.
But I have Thrill Kill, though.
Do you?
Yeah.
And
it was back when you could buy like ROMs of burned discs of games on eBay.
Yeah,
yeah. Before they started regulating all that stuff, Thrill Kill would be an awesome topic for another time.
We can talk about Thrill Kill.
Yeah, I mean
that was a 4-player fighter. Thrill Kill turned into Def Jam, the first Def Jam 4-player fighter game. What was that called?
Def Jam Vendetta.
Was that the first
fight
one
for New York?
I don't know if that was the first one or not. But
I think Vendetta was the first one.
Okay. Yeah, it was going to be from EA. And it was a gimmick thing. It was a 4-player fighter that was ultra violent.
Yeah, and
I'm trying to think what the kills were. There was like an S&M dominatrix character, had like a cattle prod, like an electric cattle prod, and she would like they had finishing moves like in Mortal Kombat where she would like stick it in someone's gut and shock them until they blew into pieces, or she would like put them on all fours and ride them like a cowgirl and then stick the electric shocker up their ass. It was like something. It was like this. But this is like 1997 or 98.
Yeah, it's around there. Because I remember PlayStation Magazine did like really was covering the hell out of that game. And the interesting lore behind that game for the readers that or the listeners that don't know is that that game went gold and was done and then got canceled.
Yeah,
like literally like weeks before it came out, it was like they're like we're not releasing this game anymore because it was, I guess, over the top. You know, and maybe we expect that more now today, but back in the day, I guess things were a little more sensitive.
Yeah.
But
that's another thing that we're talking about though is that We're so desensitized to that now that right. Mortal Kombat isn't as shocking as it used to be. Yeah. Like, I think the fatalities are great in the new Mortal Kombat, but like, they have to really go so far over the top to get a reaction.
They do.
Out of
some
us.
Of these things are just absurdly violent yeah. and visceral, just to like get close to that level that from the first one, just like which was like a spike pit.
Yeah,
and you were like, "What?"
He's like, "Oh, he pulled out the guy's head." Yeah, and blood came out.
I know. Somebody watched. Clement's playing it, and it was like Scorpion like chops someone on the neck and then on the waist and then kicks their torso out and cuts their head in half in the air and blood splashes everywhere and they go weak and walk away. So like that's how desensitized we are.
Of course, we are very, you know, we're typically very cynical, hard to impress gamers over here.
And still, some of them made people actually like cringe. Which
yeah,
was
the one.
Kind of funny.
Which one is it?
Noob that when, Cybots.
Yeah, like, it's Noob Cybots where they tear someone apart at the
from the legs
at the taint.
Yeah, from taint to tip. That's not what I meant to say.
Anyway, so Thrill Kill. Yeah, like you said, it was like had gone gold. I totally subscribed to PlayStation Magazine back in the day, too. Is that magazine
with the
still
smiley
around?
Face and the wink?
Yeah. Was that, is that magazine still around?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I remember it came out in PSM started in like 97. My friend had the first issue at his birthday party, and I took the subscription thing out and subscribed. So I had every issue from issue 2 onward. And I love the PlayStation cover cases you get. Like, I had the smiley face one.
Yeah, the smiley face one.
They really covered Thrill Kill. And like, obviously, the nature of the magazine was we didn't even know it was on like the release list for like that month. And then we didn't know until the next month when they wrote up that it got canceled or whatever. So, not that I was going to buy it anyway, I guess. I was playing too many RPGs at that time.
So, yeah. I was in college. At this time, I was going to the University of Kansas, and I totally bought a ROM, a disc of Thrill Kill off eBay, but I don't remember like...
A Bleem disc?
What does that mean?
Bleem
was that
what they called it? So I had modded my PlayStation so it would play these discs.
Bleem was one of the piracy program things you could do, okay. And then the Dreamcast version was Bleemcast.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but yeah.
I had opened up my PlayStation and soldered in that wire that allowed you to play whatever it is. I was like importing Japanese games. I imported this Gamera game.
Wow, there's a Gamera game?
It was like an on-rails. It was like Panzer Dragoon, but with Gamera. It was actually really...
That
really,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was a fun game. I can't remember what it was called offhand, but it was really good. And then I was getting all of these burn discs like Jammer Lammy and...
Nice.
God, I don't know. But then one of them was Thrill Kill. And I had to. So I had this game that was never released. I was really proud of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, like, it's kind of cool. It reminds me of, like, recently, like, with NBA Elite 11 being canceled, like, some people have retail copies of that game, even though, like, they never released it. So it's kind of cool. It's like a similar kind of thing where you kind of get a little taste of something that no one else is going to.
The game wasn't terrible, I should say. It wasn't, you know, if you took... It's like the early Mortal Kombat. If you took the shocking violence out of it, it would be nothing special.
Right.
But, like, we certainly had a lot of fun... watching people tear each other apart. There was like a hillbilly cannibal guy, you know, and like he was like barefoot and in overalls, and he would like tear off your arm and chew on it, stuff like that.
It was a classy game.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Super classy.
But on the point of Mortal Kombat, I think most fans aren't. I mean, I'm sure some of them will argue that it is a technically solid fighter. I feel that like
that's
a lot of people.
I should point out. I think you know, Clements would say that he does enjoy the mechanics, at least of the newest game.
Right.
Yeah, you can enjoy them enough. I think it's a different comparison than you wouldn't try to compare it to Street Fighter if you knew what you were talking about. But at the same time, like Mortal Kombat's kind of a whole package. Like people like that beyond just like interesting fatalities. There's this whole kind of like every character is. Somewhat interesting. They all kind of have these like different move sets and their own like gimmicks too, in addition to the like violence stuff. So like there are people who kind of argue it was cool to play like Scorpion versus Sub-Zero and have that, whereas like when you played Street Fighter, one dude would be Ken, one would be Ryu, and you couldn't like argue who was better because they were the same character. So it's kind of like everybody had their own little things to it, and there was this weird kind of humor to it that a lot of fighting games don't manage to have. Even though it was, like, so over-the-top and, like, grotesque, it was also funny in a way. And that, like, the new game kind of manages to bring that back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's, like, so many games on the backlog. It's, like, I'm interested in trying it, but at the same time, it's, like, there's just too many other things that are going to take precedent, and I feel like it's just going to get buried, so.
I'm interested in that game, but I feel like I'm at a point in my life that's hard to really get into it, because I think it's designed for, like, people to play with friends, and, like, when you have friends over and stuff. But you know, I'm an adult. I live alone. I don't have friends over to my house very often, so I don't have a lot of opportunities. But you can play online. But I, you know,
better
it's not the same. Yeah, it's just not the same as like having someone on the couch next to you. Like I spent so countless hours playing Rival Schools when I was in college. Because I had, you know, like I lived in a house with a bunch of guys, and we would have parties, and we'd have people over, and we'd all get in onto the couch and play Rival Schools.
Rival Schools is a great game.
Yeah. I don't have that anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The original Mortal Kombat was released in 1992. It was developed by just 4 people.
Wow.
And it was one of the first games, if not the first, to use those digitized sprites where there was, so it was like.
Yeah. It looked so real.
I mean, there are is actual photographs of actors.
Yeah.
And then. I don't know exactly how the technology works, but it's a very specific look.
I wonder who those actors are now.
Yeah. Where are they now?
I want to find Sonya Blade.
Johnny Cage.
The original Sonya Blade.
Like I mentioned Pit Fighter earlier. Do you guys remember Pit Fighter? This is another like digitized...
I remember it existing, but yeah, I never
played it. Game. It's like Bloodsport, where it's like a... I think it's a one-on-one fighter or maybe a two-on-two, but it's like there was a crowd and then you're down in this pit just brawling, and it's you have digitized sprites of actors again.
And it was on, what was it on?
It came out in arcades.
Oh, okay.
And then I think it came probably came to consoles. Probably came to Genesis or something like that. Too.
I miss Killer Instinct. As a Genesis kid, I didn't get Killer Instinct, so I had to go to my friend's
house. That was a rare game.
Yeah. The developer, not like hard to find.
Well, yeah, that too. It was a really big deal when Mortal Kombat came home to Super Nintendo and Genesis. And the ports were very different.
They were.
Yeah.
Because the Super Nintendo one was technically superior and had better graphics.
Yeah, it looked better. Looked like the arcade.
However, it was censored.
Yeah.
So all of the blood was changed to this gray sweat.
Right.
So it we've been talking about, taking away the whole gimmick of the game, the whole reason to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
The fatalities were changed to finishing bonus. You could perform a finishing bonus on your
very exciting.
Yeah. I know, right?
But I don't think I ever played Mortal Kombat on the Genesis, but how did it control in terms of, like, when you played Street Fighter on the 3-button Genesis controller, you had to hit start to switch between punches and kicks. Like, it made the game, like, really, like, hard to play.
Wow, I don't even remember
I played
that.
It on the 6-button.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was, like, a similar kind of thing with Mortal Kombat.
I don't remember offhand.
I can't remember how it actually worked.
I remember you were
probably pressing, like, you know, you had A, B, C, and then you had, like, A and B and B and C.
Yeah.
They always did that, and that would be 5 buttons, and that would be enough to play Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I assume so.
You guys remember the Game Genie?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Is the Game Genie still around?
No.
No, it's Game Genie got replaced by Game Shark, and Game Shark got replaced by Action Replay.
Okay. Interesting. There was a Game Genie code that would turn the sweat red on the SNES version. It still didn't look quite right, but at least it was the color of blood. But it didn't, like, look quite the same as it did in the arcade.
I loved Game Genie. It was fun. I mean, I didn't really like cheating with it, but the one thing Game Genie did on NES especially was make your cartridges work better because, like, it had a snugger fit and then you... Because, like, the NES pins sat on top of each other for whatever reason. But, yeah, I think SNES and Genesis were the last generation that had those. And then, like you said, PlayStation and Saturn stuff had...
And Game Shark.
Game Shark.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, it was cool. I remember people like talking about that code, and I remember SNES version being technically better, and I didn't have much of a choice because I didn't have a Genesis until later, so... I got a Genesis, like, I don't know, in the late 90s, because I found Castlevania Bloodlines brand new at Toys R Us, and it was, like, really exciting. So,
that's a really good game.
Yeah, it is.
I like Bloodlines.
They had, like, a bunch of new copies of it, you know? It was, like, it's just, like, one of those awesome finds, like, totally well after that generation. Like, they were just probably sitting in the back somewhere, and someone found them.
I don't think I ever used the Game Genie myself, but I remember it being around. I remember it being sort of controversial. That Nintendo was, like, trying... They were, like, fighting it, right?
Yeah, I think Nintendo sued Galoob, actually, the makers of it. But I'm not sure.
And I remember, even, like, being a kid, like, that sort of, like, image of the corporate giant trying to stop the little guy. I remember that pissed me off.
Yeah.
Well, Nintendo did that a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's like whatever. Like, what? So if people want to, like, use a cheat code, so what? They've already bought the game. You already have their money. What do you care?
Yeah, they were total control freaks, for better and for worse at that time. I think that... When the top-loading NES came out, 94-ish, when Mega Man 6 came out, I think that I could be wrong, but I think the Game Genie didn't fit in the new top-loading NES.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they came out with
a new Game Genie, then?
But, yeah, your old Game Genie didn't work. I remember, this is before the internet, so, like, the way the thing worked, there would be a menu, and you'd have to enter, like, these digit codes.
Yeah.
But you had a book, and the book, like... would be updated. So if you bought a new Game Genie, it would be kind of an updated book, but, like, your friend would have the old book and you'd have a new game and there'd be no codes for it. And there was no internet for you to be like...
But weren't there like Game Genie codes in magazines? Like they had published Game Genie codes?
Some magazines have like a Game Genie section.
Yeah.
And they would do that. So you always had to have this like resource. You had to like track these things down. You couldn't just like... And then by the time Game Shark came out, you'd be like, there'd be whole websites.
Do you guys remember like in the old magazines, probably in like EGM and Game Fan, where towards the back, there'd be these like full page ads for import shops?
Mm-hmm.
God, I just remember I would always like pore over those thinking like, oh, I should import a PC Engine.
Yeah, yeah, they had like
all these games that aren't available.
Yeah, they had like lists of games and the prices and you'd be like, why is this game so expensive? And then this game's cheaper and like you never even heard any of this stuff. See, that's one of the great things about old gaming was that, you know, we really take for granted now that there's obviously a lot of Japan-only games that still come out, but we get a lot of those games and we get them really in a timely fashion. But back in the day, man, like localizing games took forever. I mean, a game like Dragon Warrior, for instance, took almost 3 years to come over to the United States. You know, it came out in 86 in Japan, came out in 89 here. Mm-hmm. And we kind of took those things for granted. So, like, a lot of these games were like, man, you ever hear of... I mean, we were even talking about Sweet Home, which was, like, really the precursor to Resident Evil.
Which is a game I'd never heard of until you brought this up.
Yeah, it's like a Famicom game that's, like, really the about a haunted house that's, like, really the precursor for Resident Evil. And apparently Resident Evil was supposed to originally be a remake of Sweet Home. And... But it's like when you hear it, I remember first reading about that game on the internet in like the mid-90s or whatever, late 90s, and it's like, man, like what the hell is Sweet Home? Like, we never got this game. And that was the way it always was. We were always anxious to get these games. Some of these games never came out. We never heard of them. We didn't even know Super Mario 2 was not Super Mario 2 until well after that generation. No one knew that, you know? It's like, it's just so cool. We kind of take those things for granted. The internet, in a way, kind of has ruined a lot of the mystique of gaming from the days of yore when you would like exchange codes and hints with your friends, and like Simon's Quest is a great example. Like, who the hell knew you had to kneel down at that certain place and the tornado would come whisk you away to a new part of the map and stuff? No one figured that out. It was like a friend told a friend from Nintendo Power. You read it in the magazine, and now you just go on Game Facts and look it up.
Another classic franchise that's returning soonish is Duke Nukem, obviously. Duke Nukem, very high-profile game. It's making Colin groan over here.
Yeah. I mean,
also not a big fan of Duke Nukem, I take it.
I have no problem with the game mechanically. I mean, I didn't play the early Duke Nukems at all when they were side-scrollers, but... yeah, just more about the vaporware nature of this game is, like, just annoying the shit out of me, to be honest.
Yeah, so. The trailers are bugging me. It just seems very, I don't know.
I think people in general are really excited about this game, and I anticipate it selling really well, but there isn't a lot of excitement in the IGN office.
Yeah.
We could let the listeners know. Like, many of us are really like, oh, I can't wait for that Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that, as I'm seeing things, it's kind of cool, because I played, like, a little bit of Duke Nukem, and I'm recognizing things in the game. I mean, so it's very, like, lots of similar weapons. They were showing off, that shrink gun is back in it and stuff, so it's kind of like, okay, cool, this nice little homage to it. But then, I mean, like, then they're like, hey, watch, let's pick up some poop. And you're like, oh, okay, great, awesome. 12-year-olds made a video game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the game to me, the franchise I keep thinking about when people bring up Duke Nukem is Leisure Suit Larry. It's like, Leisure Suit Larry came out in the late 80s, and it was like, it worked in the time and stuff like that. And obviously, Duke Nukem
came
out.
Maybe if listeners don't know what it is, explain exactly what it is.
Leisure Suit Larry was like originally like an adventure game. Based upon this like 40-something-year-old like kind of dirtbag like faux ladies man guy that would like just be chasing women and it was like really dirty humor and stuff like that. But it was very timely. Like, it fit in the times. There was nothing like it, and like people I know really enjoyed those games. There was like 6 of them or something in like a 7 or 8 year period on PC. And then
it came back recently and was terrible.
Exactly. So Leisure Suit Larry was like stopped in like 96, and then
PS2 one?
Yeah, Magna Cum Laude or whatever came out, which I guess was okay, but then more recently...
It was not okay.
I was reading about the new one, and I actually beat the newest one, but I got the Platinum Trophy on PlayStation 3. And it was like
The things you will do for your trophies.
I know, it's nuts. It was like...
That was during the war, though.
Yeah, it was during the Great Trophy
back,
War.
I remember back in the war.
Now we're really...
It was like a game where I was
a veteran. You're a vet.
Yeah, I'm a vet. Okay. And I'm a veteran of a Great Trophy Horror War. And Trophy Horror War 1. And so I played Box Office Bus, which is the newest Leisure Suit Larry, and what I realized was the game was like technically unsound. It was awful. I was reading a lot about it on the wiki. People think it's like one of the worst games of the generation, and like what I'm wondering is like even the humor and stuff was like so ill-timed, and like it didn't fit, and it just didn't work. Like, Leisure Suit Larry doesn't work anymore, you know? And that's kind of what I keep thinking about with Duke Nukem. Like, Duke Nukem might not work anymore. We're going to find out if it does or not, but like the last Duke game of any consequence, with the exception of, I guess, Game Boy Advance games and stuff, was Duke Nukem 3D. That was really the first-person shooter. That's what we think about when we think about Duke Nukem. That was 15 years ago. You know, that's a long time ago that game came out.
You know, you realize, so Yeah, so a little history on Duke Nukem here. I didn't realize this. The original Duke Nukem came out in 1991.
I didn't know it was that early.
Wow. And it was a side-scrolling like platformer shooter. Much like the later on, their Duke Nukem came to Game Boy Color, and it was a side-scrolling game. And Craig Harris gave it a 9.0.
Oh, boy. The Game Boy Color has a lot of 9.0s.
It's IGN's highest-rated Duke Nukem game alongside the Game Boy Advance version, which ran in 3D also. But both of those games got a 9.0 from IGN.
Interesting.
Yeah, so Duke Nukem started out as a side-scrolling platformer on PC, and apparently was one of like sort of like that and Commander Keen sort of like brought platforming to the PC.
Yeah, and shareware models too, yeah. I think.
And it wasn't until 1996 that Duke Nukem 3D came out, and that's the one that really blew up. But that was one that had the sort of over-the-top violence and the sexuality and the profanity and yeah. all that stuff.
And that's cool, but again, that was like, it's the same thing with Mortal Kombat. Like, that was timely, and like, people didn't see anything like that at the time. Like, it was unexpected. I think that's what people were into it. I mean, you said, like, the game sold really well. I was reading about it. It sold 3.5 million copies. That's really impressive for 1996 on a PC from a game that's not it, from a company, rather, that's not id. I mean, that's really, really impressive. That's like, you know, I don't know how Doom sold, but you would expect Doom or Quake to sell that well. Doom 2 and even Wolfenstein and the packs that came after that. Mm-hmm. It's like, so that's a really impressive number, but, you know, and I've talked about this on Podcast Beyond too. I think it would have been cooler if the, like, when Duke Nukem Forever was supposed to come out in like 98, 99, or whatever they had then, they should have just finished that. Like now, and then to release it as a $10 PlayStation Network and XBLA game, so we could have seen. It would have been kind of cool. Again, it would have had a great mystique. Like we would have seen like what this game that almost never came out was, even if it's really dated looking and stuff like that. Instead, they kind of tried to give it just like they did with Leisure Suit Larry. It's like they tried to give it the look of the time, the feel of the time with new graphics and new mechanics and stuff like that. And it's just it didn't work then. And I'm not sure if it's going to work now. Like I think the ship has sailed for Duke Nukem. Like really, who cares? You know. Like,
well, that's lots of people do that.
I know, but it's like who is it that really is like so excited about Duke Nukem? It has to be older gamers, you know. And it's like, I just feel like they should have fonder memories of a myriad of games that have come out since then that they would anticipate more than another Duke Nukem game. But that's my opinion, I guess. You know,
I think it's right after E3. Duke Nukem Forever finally comes out.
Yeah, it got pushed back again. So you know, recently. So it's too funny, man. It's like what, 12 years now in the making. It's like. Yeah. No amount of hype, no amount of effort and how great the game is going to live up to the hype of so long. Like five different companies having their hand on that game, five different like developers. You know,
I hope people have seen enough of it so far to know what they're to expect, at least on a general level. I mean, I feel like I don't know what they're doing is helping or hurting the hype level, but
yeah, you're gonna find out.
There are gonna be a lot of boobs in it, so score.
I'm interested. I will say that I am going to play it.
I
have to play it.
Yeah.
Maybe the trophies will be good, Damon. I don't know. It'll certainly, I'm sure, be better than Box Office Bust.
I think that's safe to say.
My girl, I'll never forget my girl. I was like screaming into a pillow at one point. I'm like, oh, like this game's so, like I can't. Like I was like doing some awful platforming or whatever. And my girlfriend was just like,
there's
like staring at me, like shaking
it?
Her head. Yeah, like you have to like, there's like some awkward like camera angles and stuff. That game, oh my God, dude. Oh, it's like the most painful experience. I can't believe I'm almost ashamed I have a platinum trophy in that game, but I digress.
Well, I think one of the best things about this is a great time to be a gamer. Not only do we have great new games like, you know, Crysis 2 and Portal 2 coming out all the time, but there's like always something like retro-ish, you know, being released at the same time too. Whether it's like Super Meat Boy, something that's kind of like based on old school platformers, or it's re-releases of old games, HD versions of old games, or faithful ports of old games, all this stuff. There's always like something retro going on. So right now, things retro-ish games you should probably want to check out right now. There's a game called Monster Tail on DS.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is a Metroidvania-style game. You should probably check it out. Probably one of the good last DS games.
Yeah, there's nothing to still play on your 3DS for a while, so go ahead and buy a DS game.
We have Monster Tail in 8.5. It's cool. It's like you play a little girl who gets whisked away to this new world, and you have a monster buddy who follows you around, and you do a lot of exploring, like in Metroidvania, and upgrading your powers and then backtracking so you can get to new areas. And you can always upgrade your monster buddy that follows you around in like Pokemon style to increase its abilities, and it'll fight enemies around the environment for you, that sort of thing. And you feed it like lollipops to upgrade it, or you can like have it train and play sports to like improve its abilities. It's cool.
Cool.
And Colin, you reviewed Moondiver recently. This is a PlayStation Network game coming soon to Xbox Live.
Yeah, okay. May 4th or 5th, I think it comes to XBLA. So a couple weeks.
You gave Moondiver a 7.0. What's Moondiver all about?
So it's a Shinobi-like game, actually from the developer of... Strider-like game from the... it's Strider, right? We had this conversation before. It's I keep getting the two games confused.
Well, which is it?
I think it's Strider.
Okay.
Shinobi's the ninja. It's definitely Strider. Yep. It's a Strider-like game from the developer of Strider. And it's cool. It's fun. It's heinously old school in the sense that I really think...
It's difficult.
It's a difficult game. It's really meant to be played. Here's the crux of the issue. It's meant to be played with multiple gamers, either locally or online. But if you get more than two gamers on there, you can have up to four. The game gets really muddled and confusing. It's hard to keep track of your character, especially because you can all theoretically use the same character. So it's like, and there's nothing really differentiating them if you do that. So like, I jumped into a game online. Someone was using my character. It was really hard for me to figure out who I was, even though there was like a little icon above my head. It's very fast paced and stuff. I recommend it, but it's a good game. Like I said, it's 7.0. It's a good game, but it doesn't live up to the hype. I was expecting more out of it. And it's really, I tried to beat it by myself and I got all the way through the game, but I had like to the end boss, but I had to drop the difficulty level because, and so it's kind of like a catch 22 because you need your help with friends, but it doesn't play quite as well if you're not playing it by yourself. So, and it's a little expensive. I'd wait for it to drop in price. Unless you're really
15 still.
Yeah. It's $15 on PSN.
Yeah. We're seeing, that seems to be the new standard price for downloadable games, which is disappointing, but at the same time, all you have to do is wait a little bit and everything goes on sale. Mm-hmm. Like right now, there's an amazing sale going on in Xbox Live for Limbo and other like Microsoft release games.
Shadow Complex.
Cool. Castle Crashers are all like 50% off right now. So
yeah, it's great. I think the $15 level is fine for some games. I mean, I know we both really have a soft spot for Trine, for instance, and that's more of a $15 or $20 level game, and you can really understand spending that much money on that kind of game. But I think the $10 is a sweet spot for everything else.
I think so too.
So I'm a little disappointed that developers are really trying to push it. And if Moondiver was $10, I'd be much more inclined to recommend it to people that might be on the fence. But I mean, I'd wait for it to drop. Like you said, like these things do drop in price. We were just talking about like Section 8 and all these games that like start at like really high price and like a week later, like half the price they were. So.
Now you mentioned Strider.
Mm-hmm.
That game has a long history. It's been dormant for a long time.
Yes.
Wonder if we'll ever see a return of Strider.
Maybe this is, in a way it's like, it's surprising that Moondiver wasn't a Strider game, but so in a sense I'm inclined to think that, it's not going to come, but maybe this is like kind of testing the waters to see.
Did you play Strider on NES?
Yeah, that's my experience with it.
So, but I think it was an arcade game first.
Yeah, that's how I understand it too. A lot of things were. I mean, even like even when you watch like The Wizard and stuff like that, which is a great old 80s movie, it's like you see that a lot of these games were in the arcade, and I don't remember playing any of them in the arcade. Like Castlevania was in the arcade, but I didn't.
I was going to say, I think that's where I first became aware of it. But see, to be honest, that's part of the PlayChoice 10. Series, I believe, which is Nintendo arcade cabinets that just played NES games.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense.
I don't know that there was just a dedicated Castlevania machine made by Konami.
Yeah, that would be awesome if there was.
I might be wrong, but I don't think there was.
Because, I mean, even I don't know exactly what the nature of it is, but Sam Claiborne, one of our editors here, is really into retro games too. He has a bunch of arcade cabinets. One of the arcade cabinets plays Mega Man 3. It's like, which is my favorite game of all time, and that's like really crazy. And I wonder, like, was that.
It had to be part of PlayChoice 10.
Yeah, it must have been, because I'm like, is that like out there? Like, I don't remember. I used to go to arcades. I don't remember seeing those. I remember very specific games from the arcades. None of them were games that I was playing on the NES. A lot of them were Genesis games and Sega games and stuff like that, games that I wasn't really exposed to in the home. So, but yeah, in terms of Strider, I think it would be cool. It's like, games are coming back. Like Bionic Commando came back. People really enjoyed Rearmed and stuff
Rearmed
like that.
Rearmed is good. Rearmed 2 was not good.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So,
so do it right.
Yeah, do it right.
And they just brought Russian Attack back. Oh, God, that game is terrible.
Well, that game didn't need to come back. It's like that's like a Cold War era. Like, that game doesn't even make sense anymore. It's like, I don't know why they did that. But
I liked the original game. The original game is fun. It has really cool music, too. Also a Konami game.
Mm.
Check that one out on NES.
Konami's bringing back a lot of old school stuff. Because they did the same thing with Rocket Knight last year.
Yeah, which was okay.
Like, it was okay. It was kind of like, oh, why'd you bring this back?
Rocket Knight Adventures was a Super Nintendo Genesis game,
yeah.
16-bit game.
It was $15 when it came out, if I remember correctly. So.
I think it was also an episode 1 that never got an episode 2.
Yeah, probably. Yep. Whatever happened to the Sonic, new Sonic episodes?
Apparently they switched over to Generations.
I don't know. Sega's dumping like it's weird because at least on PSN, like Sega dumped like Gunstar Heroes on there, and then like didn't do anything for a while. Then like released more recently, like Sonic Episode 1 and then like Sonic 1 and 2 are coming out, like Golden Axe or something's coming out in a few weeks and stuff. So like they're starting to, I think companies are in the sense that we're talking about retro games, I think companies are starting to realize that they can just really dump these games back on like these networks and people will buy them for $5 a piece.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Well, I mean, Backbone has already emulated all the Genesis games for the collection.
Which so I have two Platinums in, because I...
The Genesis collection? Yeah, because you got the Mega Drive collection Genesis collection.
So yeah, we have the Sega Genesis collection, which I got the Platinum in, and then Sam Claiborne, again, has the Australian version of the game, because it came with like a vinyl record that he wanted with the soundtracks, and I got I did it all again and got the separate Platinum.
Because they changed the name, it's a completely different trophy set, but it's the same thing. So you can just Platinum it twice.
That's amazing.
But anyway, all those games are out. So
the
like
Sega Genesis collection is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Any of our listeners that did not have a Genesis back in the day, you have to pick that one up. You can get it's a budget title, and you get all of these great Sega Genesis games.
Yeah,
in
anyone who's thinking of buying these games on Xbox Live or PSN, just go get the collection and get all of them. And then
it's fantastic.
That. The only thing that's different is that like the XBLA stuff, like Sonic 2, lets you play the multiplayer modes online, and the disc collection doesn't.
Yeah.
So.
But not too important to me. But,
no.
It's available on both 360 and PS3.
So. Yeah, it's really cool. You know what game, by the way, I really dig, and people think I'm crazy because I wasn't a Genesis kid. Like I said, I got Genesis later. And the only games I really played on Genesis of Friends were like EA Sports games, which were great on Genesis. But that game, it's a really early Genesis game, Fatal Labyrinth. Are you familiar with that game?
That's a game I think I remember seeing the box. I'd go to the rental store. I would go to Video Library to rent my games. And I remember seeing that box 100 times, but I don't think I ever actually played it.
It's like a dungeon crawling like RPG. But
is it
like
isometric?
No, it isn't.
Okay.
And it's basically... it's like Ease 1 and 2, where instead of attacking characters, you're basically just running into them. Mm. And like that's damaging them. And it's just a strange... Like, I'm vaguely remembering it now, because I only played it enough to get the trophy in that game, and then I stopped, because I would just move on from game to game in that collection.
Yeah.
But I remember being like, this game, you know, in 10 or 15 minutes, it's like, this game's kind of cool. Like, I wish there was like more simple RPGs like this on Super Nintendo, because it wasn't very polished, but we didn't get a lot of, like... Nintendo was still kind of crazy with the quality control stuff at that point. And so we didn't get a lot of these, like, kind of in-the-middle games too often. But it was cool.
Nintendo had its awesome action RPGs, though. The Super Nintendo.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And the Secret of Mana, of course.
I really think the ultimate game that people overlook too much is the NX game, ActRaiser, which I think is like...
Oh, ActRaiser is great.
It's not the second one, though, because everyone, like, looks at the second one and they want to, like, start with that one. But that's, like, a straight action game, like... ActRaiser is like such a good game that combines like RPG and strategy elements.
Yeah, it's a blend of these two genres.
There's nothing like it. There's like nothing like it before or after. Like I can't believe that people like haven't demanded an ActRaiser, like a new ActRaiser game. Those games are so good. And I remember being like young and people were like kind of like, at least in my neighborhood and in my school and stuff, people were like, man, this game's really cool. But like then they released ActRaiser 2, which basically just gutted the game, and that was the end of it.
Explain more about ActRaiser. This was a Super Nintendo launch title, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really early, 1991, so it must have been. It's basically a game that is half action game. So you'd go through like 2D action platforming sections where you'd fight enemies and kill a boss. And that would unlock a part of a map, like a world map, where you would then go into this mode of building a town in like a SimCity kind of way, where you would build a town and build, like, people would ask you for things. You'd give them like water, or, like, let them plant crops, and they'd build houses, and they'd become stronger and stronger and have this thriving community, which would then unlock another segment of the map where you'd go back into an action part of the game and fight enemies and unlock another part of the map. It was like really it was a really awesome game. It's on Virtual Console. I went back and played it not too long ago. That's a really special game. It's like probably one of my favorite games on the Super Nintendo, easily.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a shame because the second game came out, and for some reason they thought it would be wise to remove the best elements of the game, which were the strategy elements.
Yeah, so
it was just an action game.
Yeah.
And that was like, because the action parts were fun, but it definitely wasn't like a blow you away kind of game in that sense. The blow you away part of the game was like the real strategy and thought that had to go into like, you know, figuring all these puzzles out and making your communities thrive and stuff. I remember there was like even really specific number sets. I looked them up on GameFAQs, like, because it was a pretty primitive game compared to SimCity, but like you would have to like, to get your communities to the maximum growth level, you'd have to like actually destroy houses and destroy farms and make them rebuild them over and over again. So you get like randomized numbers of people in each house until you reach like the maximum level where like no one would build anything anymore and stuff. Like really crazy old school shit like that. So, but a really special game, and I totally recommend that game to people too.
I remember, even before the Super Nintendo was out, you could rent the Super Famicom from Video Library.
Wow.
So I rented the Super Famicom with Super Mario World. beat it. So I'd beaten Super Mario World before it was even out here. I remember that being really awesome. Like, all
my
friends.
Was that your first time that you were like a video game snob to your friends? Like, eh, I beat that.
Yeah, maybe it might be. But I remember like, so I beat it, and then I went back and played it again, and we had this like giant camcorder. Like, remember when a camcorder was something that you like rested on your shoulder? Mm-hmm.
With like a full video cassette tape in the side.
Exactly. Yeah. A VHS cassette tape you put in there. And then I like filmed the TV, and I filmed like me beating the game. It's awesome. Awesome.
That's really cool.
It's really good. Also out right now is Bit Trip Runner. It came out for WiiWare last year, and it's out for PC now on Steam. And those are, the whole Bit Trip series has a very cool retro aesthetic.
Yep.
And each entry in the series is a little bit different, plays its own way. The Runner game is sort of this on-rails platformer-style game that's popular right now, like Cannibalt or the
Rainbow Super, Unicorn,
yeah,
something,
attack that we
robot.
Have in our robot unicorn
Erasure
attack.
Song.
Yeah.
Erasure Song.
The Adult Swim game.
Yeah. I think it's Robot Unicorn Attack. Isn't it?
Robot Unicorn Attack. Sure.
We have it in our break room. We don't even know what it is. But also out right now are two portable Final Fantasies that are both really good. Final Fantasy III is available for iPhone now. Mm-hmm. And wow. It's a good, really good port of that game. And then, Colin, you also recently reviewed the Final Fantasy IV, what is it, Complete Collection?
Yeah, Complete Collection.
For PSP.
Yeah, it's a fine. I give it a 9. It's. 3 is a great game, too, because I think 3 is on iPhone is a port of the DS remake, which is the first time they ever got the game. And that's a good game.
I totally redid all the visuals in 3D for that one.
Yeah, it's cool. It's fun. And that was obviously the last Final Fantasy game we never got in the States, so it's like kind of special in that way. Mm. And if you played them all in order that they came out in the States, then that was the last one you're going to play, I guess, after 12. And so that's kind of cool to go back and play that. But yeah, 4 Complete Collection is really cool. I really like it. I think Final Fantasy 4 is easily the second best Final Fantasy game. Only 6 is better than it, in my opinion, and I'm waiting for 6 to finally get some treatment.
Where does 7 fit on that list for you?
I was talking about this on Twitter, actually, because someone asked me, I ordered them. It's like, I go like 4, 6, 9, 5, and then 7, or wow. 1 and 7. So 7's like somewhere in the middle. I think I actually like 1
somewhere
more.
Somewhere Clements' head is just like...
Yeah, like and then like 13 and 12 and then 10 are at the end. So
Final Fantasy VII is a retro game now.
Yeah.
It is retro.
It's 14 years old.
I guess 8 and 9 also are.
I mean, yeah,
9 feels less retro. If you go back and look at 7 and then 9 and like compare them, even when they came out, I remember like playing 9 and loving it and then going back to 7 and being kind of taken aback by like,
yeah.
I'm like, I thought I remembered this looking better, and it's only been like a year since I played it last.
Yeah. Well, PlayStation and N64 are like 3D era games, like don't stand up today. Like that's
really,
the,
when games went 3D, they got really ugly.
Yeah, they did. I mean, like, because I look at like really late Super Nintendo games that look, are really pretty. Like Final Fantasy VI is a great example. Like that's a pretty game. Art. That's still a pretty game.
Yeah.
But then you look at like Mario 64, Pilot Wings, like early N64 games, and then moving into like PlayStation games and stuff, and you look, go back and look at them, even Final Fantasy VII, which was beautiful when it came out. It's like, man, this game kind of looks like shit. Yeah.
Ocarina of Time with the remake that they're doing for the 3DS. I'm looking at it, and when I look at the remake, it's how I remember the game.
Yeah, the remake's
really
pretty.
And then I go back and look at the actual game, and it's like, oh man, I don't remember his like face being a triangle, and his nose is like huge, and like Zelda is not pretty, and.
Yeah, it's like it's the nature of the times, which is kind of cool in a sense because it's very dated and it reminds you that you're what you're playing, but. At the same time, yeah, so 7 kind of, like, Final Fantasy 7 kind of lost its luster, but with 4, I definitely recommend it. I think it's a great game. It's a story-driven game. That package has the After Years content from WiiWare in it, which is, like, a pretty lengthy experience. It's got an all-new 3 or 4 hour piece called The Interlude, which ties everything together. Mm. It's just a really special game, and I know that it's not only because, like, I have really great memories of that game. It's just a really story-driven, character-driven game. New Final Fantasies aren't. And that's why it's so cool. Like I'm kind of messing around with writing a piece right now about Final Fantasy 13 and why I don't like it. And it's a lot of the reason is because like the characters are unlikable and they focus on all the wrong things. It's all about graphical fidelity and audio. We didn't have any choice back then. Like we had to use our imagination. These were sprites running around really primitive environments.
I've always loved that super deformed look. The little squat characters of old RPGs. I still love that aesthetic.
Yeah, I do too. And I think it works. And obviously it works because really the great RPGs, Wild Arms and Tales of Destiny and the Final Fantasies from the 90s and all those, they all use that same look, and even Dragon Quest, which inspired Final Fantasy, uses that same look. So there's something to be said about that. But if you really just want like a more cerebral Final Fantasy experience as far as like story and thought and plot and some solid gameplay, then go pick up Final Fantasy IV. It's $30. I mean, that's really cheap. You get a lot of, it's like 70 hours at least. So it's, you know, if you have that kind of time, that's totally great.
Well, listeners, thank you for joining us for this first episode of Back in the Day. We have some homework for you. If you've never played Castlevania 2, definitely go and check that one out. It's available on the Virtual Console and by other various means.
Yeah, you can figure it out. And I, in 10th grade...
You're smart. Figure it out.
In 10th grade, I wrote a fact for it, which is still on GameFAQs, so you can find it if you need help.
Wow,
and
awesome.
You will need help.
Yeah, you'll need help. But really, really good. I think I probably agree with Colin. It's probably my second favorite Castlevania game after Symphony of the Night. And write into us and let us know what you think of the game. Does it hold up? Do you think it's still fun today? What was your experience with Castlevania 2? This is a GameScoop Presents podcast, so you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. Write us in to let you know, let us know what you think about this new podcast, about the format, what works, what doesn't, and what you want to see, what you want to hear us talk about, that sort of thing. So thank you, Colin, and thank you, Jack.
Thank you
for joining us. My name is Damon. We leave you today with the sounds of Metroid on the NES. This is a fantastic soundtrack, one of the best on the NES. Not only is it very tuneful, very melodic, but they were also able to achieve very strange, otherworldly sounds that are perfect for a sci-fi game set on another planet. So this is what video game music sounded like back in the day.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.